Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Riley Smith.
I know rain delays are keeping most of you out of the fields at this point, but hopefully that will let up soon and we can get those planters rolling. Welcome into this week's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Riley Smith. Segment one this week is brought to you by Bex. Since 1937, Bex has stood up for the things that matter most: faith, independence, and helping farmers succeed. Russ Parker, Dustin Huffman will join us later on in the show. As for right now, let's start with a quick look at the news headlines. Affordability and accessibility are the top barriers for farmers seeking mental health services, per an American Farm Bureau Federation survey. During May Mental Health Awareness Month, the Iowa Farm Bureau wants to remind farmers support is readily available and at no cost through personal assistance services. This service provides families with personalized ongoing counseling. It is facilitated by rural mental health clinicians, many of whom have a farming background or understand the unique challenges farming communities face. They offer tailored support for stress, anxiety, sleep issues, substance abuse, and more. Iowa Farm Bureau President Brent Johnson says, quote, "We put so much energy into our farms that sometimes we can neglect our own well-being. While farming is a calling and a significant part of our life, you, as a friend, spouse, parent, neighbor, community member, and volunteer, are irreplaceable, and your health deserves to be prioritized. We feel strongly about mental health for farm families, which is why we provided financial assistance to a farm-focused mental health program in 2020 that has now expanded nationwide," end quote. Additionally, Iowa Farm Bureau has compiled a comprehensive list of mental health services, Iowa-based resources, and suicide prevention hotlines that assist all Iowans in their pursuit of wellness. For more information, visit iowafarmbureau.com/farmstress. In other news, the 2024 Iowa's Best Burger was announced this week. From cheese curds to chip dust, burgers as big as dinner plates to multiple patty burgers, fresh veggies to cheeses and sauces to spreads, this year's top 10 Iowa's Best Burger restaurants had it all. However, only one can claim the title of Iowa's Best Burger in 2024, and this year's winner goes to JJ's Tavern and Grill in Ankeny. Owners Rick and Lilia Romero and Michael Roberts, also the general manager, and Liberty Van Genderen say JJ's Tavern and Grill is about family. They've worked diligently to build this for their employees, but also want their customers to recognize the family vibe. JJ's Tavern and Grill offers a wide selection of elevated bar food offerings. As Liberty described, there is something for everyone's palate. The Best Burgers contest timing is intentional and celebrates the kickoff of Iowa's Beef Month. JJ's has several beef options. The menu currently features 8 smash burger selections. All look delicious, but Rick and Michael highlighted the JJ Smash Burger, the Brock Curdy Burger, and the Jalapeno Cheddar. Each smash burger can be a single patty or double. The competition in being named as a top 10 contestant in Iowa's Best Burger competition has already had a significant impact on the business. Since being named a top 10 contestant on March 12th, they went from selling 13 burgers a day to over 36. JJ's recently opened in late November of last year. They have recently added a patio for an outdoor dining experience and additional seating. This was the 15th year for the annual Iowa's Best Burger Contest and had the added excitement of allowing previous winners the chance to be nominated again. The Best Burger Contest is sponsored by the Iowa Beef Industry Council and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association to showcase the value partnership between Iowa's cattlemen and food service providers through delicious burgers crafted by Iowa's talented chefs and restaurateurs. And finally, the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report contained a little bit of surprising data on the progress of planting so far this season. The report is released weekly April through November, and additionally, the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship provides a weather summary each week during this time. For the crop report, although the week began with dry weather, by Friday, severe storm systems brought cooler temperatures and rain, which allowed Iowa farmers 4.2 days suitable for field work during the week ending April 28th, according to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. The storms also brought tornadoes and hail to areas of the state. Corn, soybean, and oat planting advanced early in the week, but came to a halt for most as storms arrived. Topsoil moisture condition rated 5% very short, 17% short, 68% adequate, and 10% surplus. Recent rains led to just 22% short to very short for the state's topsoil versus 37% as of April 21st. Subsoil moisture condition rated 14% very short, 27% short, 53% adequate, and 6% surplus. corn planted reached 39% complete, 4 days ahead of last year and 3 days ahead of the five-year average. 2% of the expected corn crop has emerged. 25% of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 4 days ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of the average. And that's all the time we have for news headlines this week. Check out the rest of our daily news stories on iowaagnet.com. We'll go ahead and kick it over to Russ Parker with his faith-based food for thought here on Weekend Ag Matters.
My wife and I love to eat morels. They are one of those foods that just go with the first fruits of spring. Asparagus, fresh caught crappie, and morels. Nothing better. I asked my neighbor the other day if he'd found any morels yet, and his reply was, "The only way I'm going to see a morel if there's one on my plate. I never seem to be able to find them." Of course, 'tis the season to see all those Facebook posts of beautiful, newly found morels. Even saw a post from some guy showing a picture of a large area covered with them, and his caption read, "I wasn't even looking for these, just walked right into them." Well, of course he did. I'm sorry for the sarcasm, but I have the same challenge as my neighbor. My wife and I went out the other night and looked for 2 hours. She found one mushroom, not the edible kind, and when we got home, picked off a dozen ticks from our clothes. The only thing close to picking that we did. While we were hunting, I jokingly mentioned a well-known Bible passage. It goes something like this: "Seek and you will find, ask and you will be given." And I thought it was a really appropriate verse given the time and the circumstance while we were looking for morels. So when I got home thinking about it, I dug into the verse a little bit deeper. And here's the first part of what we read in Matthew 7. "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened." And if we go back and look at the original text, their meaning has a little different context. The verbs are actually action verbs, with the idea that the action is continuous. So, keep asking, keep seeking, keep knocking. It's not like the occasional seasonal hunt for mushrooms, but rather to always be looking for mushrooms. A much different undertaking and mindset. I trust you will agree. Matthew is telling us God wants to seek him always and diligently. Now the really good news are the next few verses, which read, "Which of you, if a son asked for bread, will give them a stone? Or if he asks you for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, even known to be evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?" God is good, all the time. Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. That's it for segment one on this week's episode. Coming up after this short break, Dustin sits down with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst to discuss the potential farm bill. This is Weekend Ag Matters.
There are so many decisions that go into being a successful soybean farmer. Plant date, row spacing, water management, crop rotation, soil temperature, cover crop, soil pH, nutrients, water conditions. Whew! At least becoming a farmer member of the Iowa Soybean Association is one straightforward decision in your life. If you market at least 250 bushels of soybeans annually, ISA's farmer membership is available at no additional cost thanks to your soy checkoff investment. Just activate or confirm online and start reaping the benefits. It's a no-brainer. The Iowa Soybean Association proudly celebrates 60 years of moving our industry forward.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Well, it's been a busy week here at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. A lot of things happening, including the previews of the Farm Bill, the GREET model being put out. And I was in Washington, D.C. for all of those events happening this week. And I had a chance to sit down with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst right after Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow released her version of the Farm Bill. We talked about the different goings-on right now.
We kind of are talking on a perfect day. We saw the House, G.T. Thompson, released his framework for the Farm Bill. Yes. Senator Stabenow just released her proposal for the Farm Bill. I'm sure it's just hot off the presses. Mm-hmm. You haven't probably had a whole lot of chance to look at it yet, but what kind of things are you seeing in that and how progress is going?
Well, and I haven't seen what she has actually released, Chairwoman Stabenow. But what I do know is that it doesn't include enough farm in the farm bill. We have an excessive cost in the Senate version, about $1.5 trillion for this farm bill reauthorization, but only a very, very small percentage of the overall bill goes to our farmers and farm support programs. So I'm really disappointed that we haven't been able to negotiate through that so far. I also know things like my EATS Act, which pushes back against Proposition 12, that's not included. Chairwoman Stabenow refused to put that in the bill as well. So I will be going through the farm bill that she has proposed section by section. I'll work that with my staff and get input from our farmers, our producers back home. But again, just not enough farm in the farm bill.
You know, one of the things we've been talking about today is crop insurance, obviously, and how important it is. And she has a different mode of handling it, the STACS organization. And I know Senator Hoeven has proposed keeping with ARC and PLC. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm supporting more of the John Hoeven approach. I don't like that Chairwoman Stabenow is trying to force our farmers to choose between one or the other. We need to make sure that crop insurance is readily available for our farmers, and that it's also affordable for our farmers. And we just don't see the chairwoman moving in that direction.
Now, we did hear from a lot of people on both the House and the Senate Ag Committee today, and you know, a lot of them are saying that they're hopeful it can get done, but they're also saying we've got to get a lot of things worked out, but the farmers have waited long enough. I mean, what are you thinking on that?
I think the farmers have waited way longer than they should have waited. I am a little bit of a skeptic, I think, at this point. I do want to see this come together. We need to reconcile the differences. But when we have our chairwoman that's unwilling to budge on some issues, it's really hard to do that. So there needs to be movement maybe from both sides. Let's get back to the table. But again, the farm bill at a cost in the Senate proposal is around $1.5 trillion. When there's only 14 or 15% of that going to farmers and ranchers, we don't have much more to give. So we really need those folks on the other side of the table to come back to us and work with us on this. We are representing the farm interests. So, you know, we either represent the farm interests or we need to call it something different.
Okay. Moving over to ag trade. We talked in the last report we got from USDA. We are behind. Corn got a little bit better news, but we're still way behind. But then we heard from Ambassador McCaleb on Monday night, and everything is fine, that we have the third highest trade value we've had in the last 8 years, he said.
Stop. That's what I want to say. Just stop. You can spin numbers any way you want to spin them. But what I would say is that we are exporting just a great amount. Iowa does. We know that. But we have this enormous trade deficit. If you look at the United States and our ag trade, our trade deficit is the highest it has been at $30.5 billion. $30.5 billion trade deficit. And that's just ag. So what we need to see from USDA, what we need to see from our U.S. trade rep, Catherine Tai, is more work on agreements with other countries. We need to be exporting even more, and we have the capabilities to do that. So while the administration is out there touting, oh, look at us, we've got greater trade, the trade deficit has grown, and we shouldn't be importing at such a high level if we're not exporting at a high level.
And we were talking about the broadcast is $180 billion, he said, is what the number is. But we're also looking at the fact that $20 doesn't buy what $20 used to anymore
exactly.
either.
Exactly. Exactly. We have Bidenflation, Bidenomics. And if you just look across Iowa, you know, when I'm visiting with my neighbors, when I go to, you know, grocery store at home and looking at the prices, not to mention the prices here in D.C., I mean, it's outrageous. It is outrageous for our families. The wages that they are paid in the Midwest, and when we continue to drive regulations on our farmers and ranchers, it's just making the cost of food go up. So yeah, a dollar doesn't go nearly as far as it used to. So again, this administration, they really need to get it right in their head what's going on with the American family.
Now, we do hear back sometimes that they need TPA. What can we do? What can Congress do to help them do that?
Well, I really think we missed the boat when it came to TPA. And I think that we need to continue to encourage working with other nations and increasing our trade with them. I have always looked at TPA and additional versions of that as a real opportunity for our farmers and ranchers. I hope that we can resurrect some movement towards that in the future. We need to be exporting more to these nations in the Indo-Pacific region. I've talked about this with my farmers back home before, and when I see these opportunities and we miss them, I feel really horrible because you know what? There is another nation in that region, and they are going to engage with trade with these countries, and that country is China. And when they are working with these island nations or the Indo-Pacific nations, that's cutting us out of opportunity, but it's also pulling those other nations much tighter into the grasp of China. So not only do I see it as a trade issue and an opportunity for our Iowa farmers, but I also see it as national security as well, if we can get our goods into those countries.
Okay, and then moving on to biofuels, E15. We know we got the waiver for this summer, and we got the approval, but not till 2025 for Iowa to have it all year round. But how is Congress coming on a permanent solution on that situation right now?
Well, we have E15 that with the emergency waiver, we are hoping to move forward there and be able to see E15 year round. We have the GREET model that just came out from EPA, which is not very beneficial. We have a lot of work to do in the biofuel space, whether it's ethanol, biodiesel, otherwise. But I mean, there's just so many opportunities. We just really need good leadership at the EPA, at the USDA as well, promoting these different types of products. And as well, I'll go on with some bio-based, even alternatives for plastics and so forth. I mean, there's so much that we should be doing in the bio-based space, whether it's for fuels, whether it's for other goods and services that we can provide. We need to be doing much, much more there.
And speaking of the GREET model, we were with Secretary Vilsack yesterday when the announcement was being made, and so he kind of outlined it. What are your concerns with what they have said?
I'm very concerned because we have greenies over at the White House and at USDA that are just totally running the show. And while we are really excited about the opportunity to engage in sustainable aviation fuel, to have the GREET model in place, what they put out for the GREET model and the benchmarks that our farmers are going to have to meet for that GREET model, it's almost like they don't want our farmers to participate and that they would rather have biomass and other feedstocks imported from other countries. So we're caught in a vicious cycle right now where on one hand, the administration is saying, we need our farmers to shift to sustainable aviation fuel. And on the other side, they're saying, okay, but we're gonna set the standard so high that you can't actually meet it. And we're going to enable foreign countries to participate in the sustainable aviation fuel market. They need to come together on this, and we need to find a way for our Iowa farmers to participate without setting that standard so high that they can't meet what is being proposed with GREET.
Okay, and I know you've got a very busy schedule, Senator. Last question, I guess. We're getting ready to go. We're going full throttle. I shouldn't say not getting ready and planting right now in Iowa. Any messages for those farmers back home?
Well, I think be safe. We've got spring planting coming up. We're going to have a productive year. I'm really excited about this year. But then I would just encourage all of them, do what you can do. If you have issues that are facing you when it comes to ag, when it comes to ag production, please reach out. Let us know what's going on. We always love to hear from you because it helps better inform us what we're doing here in Washington, D.C. But happy planting. Good luck. Be safe.
That again was Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. And that will be doing it for segment two. We're going to take a quick break, and Mark Magnuson will wrap up Weekend Ag Matters next.
May is National Beef Month, and with the warmer temperatures of the spring season, there's no better time to fire up the grill and enjoy some quality Iowa-raised beef. Just a 3-ounce serving of beef provides more than 10 essential nutrients like protein, iron, zinc, and vitamins B12 and B6, while only clocking in around 170 calories on average. Support your local Iowa beef producer by enjoying some nutrient-dense beef during this National Beef Month. This message brought to you by your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
We're here with Iowa State climatologist Dr. Justin Glisson for our weekly chat on the drought conditions and the climate patterns. First off, Justin, great to have you on. What do we see in the latest drought monitor report?
Hey, Riley, always a pleasure to be with you. Yep. So we're seeing a good improvement across the state. And this is the second week in which we've seen pretty broad scale one category improvement, meaning if you're in a drought category, let's say D1, moderate drought, you've been upgraded to D0, that abnormal dry category. So with the severe weather that we've had over the last several weeks, we've had multiple thunderstorms, multiple waves of low pressure systems coming through, bringing us widespread rainfall over several hours or days, which is the type of rainfall that we need. Now, of course, if you're underneath a supercell thunderstorm, you're going to get a lot more and a lot heavier rainfall that basically runs off. But overall, we're seeing an uptick in stream flows and soil moisture profiles, just what we need as we enter the growing season.
And I know, you know, we are getting kind of to that point where it's late enough due to the rain delays that there's a little bit of concerns about late planting. But I would say, honestly, at this point, when we're looking at those drought conditions, getting that moisture back in there, if you can, you know, plant a little bit later without it being too late and also get that moisture, that would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, you summed it up correct. And if you look at the potential as we move out of this strong El Nino in the winter into early spring to the potential for a weak to moderate La Nina in summer, if you look at past years where we've seen this rapid transition, 2016, back in the late 90s, we typically see a warmer than average summer. Now, that doesn't mean that June, July, August are going to be exceptionally warm, but we do see a warm signal. So banking this soil moisture right now, if we do have dry stretches through the growing season, is only beneficial. Yes, we've seen delays out there, and we really want the planters to get out there and finish, but this rainfall is also much needed given, again, 200 weeks consecutive of moderate drought somewhere in the state.
And we know, too, that, you know, we've seen in plenty of years past that if there's a couple of days of dry weather, farmers are going to get out, they're going to get out there and take advantage of that. So if we can just get some of those days mixed in there, you know, I'm sure we'll see plenty of planting progress, because, I mean, we've already seen in this week's crop progress report that, you know, like beans, a quarter of them are already in the ground.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I was actually surprised by how much days of field work that we had, 4.2, I believe, given how much rainfall that we've seen with several severe weather events as well. 41 tornadoes, that breaks the previous record for April, which is 40 tornadoes. So a very active month in April. But, you know, farmers are resilient individuals. They'll get out when that window forms, and I think we'll get planted.
So obviously we can't really predict the severe weather, but we do know that for 10 to 15 days, we're looking at that, you know, periods of rainy weather. Once again, I know this weekend looks pretty rainy as well. Are we looking at any elevated severe weather risk with those, or are we mostly just looking at maybe lower scale rain events?
Sure. We have a few products that kind of give us an idea of what we can expect. The Climate Prediction Center has the 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day outlooks on temperature and precipitation. Then the Storm Prediction Center has convective outlooks that go out to 8 days and kind of give us an idea of a larger scale setup possible for severe weather. We don't see anything right now in those 8 day outlooks on the Climate Prediction Center side is higher chances of warmer temperatures early in May, and then moving towards near normal temperatures towards the middle of May. On the precipitation side, we still see an elevated signal for wetter conditions. So that could suggest, at least in the near term, sub-severe type of storms. Now, you can never rule out strong or severe thunderstorms with these low pressure systems and cold fronts that come through. But overall, it looks like we're still in that active storm track, but we're not going to see several days in which we have active rainfall across the state.
All right, Justin, lots of great information today. Before we wrap up, is there anything else weather-wise that our viewers and listeners should know about today?
Yeah, even with all this rain, we still have that structural drought, D1 and D2 conditions across the state, and then two pockets of D3 up in northeastern Iowa. So we're always looking for observations from our farmers and producers to give us an idea of how accurate the drought depiction is each week. And that allows us to give better information to the U.S. Drought Monitor author. So my contact information is 515-281-8981 or Google Iowa Climatology Bureau. You'll come to our website. That'll have all the information you need to submit those reports.
Justin, great talking with you today as always. And we look forward to chatting again next week.
Thanks, Riley.
That again was Iowa State Climatologist Dr. Justin Glisson. And that's it for today's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Thanks again for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and more by going to the podcast tab on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network website at iowaagnet.com. For Russ Parker, Mark Magnuson, and Dustin Huffman, I'm Riley Smith, wishing you a great rest of your weekend. Join us again next week for more Weekend Ag Matters.